Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 56. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
And Josh.
And yay. Oh, and I didn't put the ad in this time. Yay. Ever since I've been using the iPod, I keep accidentally putting the ad in.
Oh, is that what, like, comes on and say?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not happening this week. Yes.
All right.
This week, we're talking about Terry Gilliam's 12 Monkeys. And but first, let's start off with what we saw this week. And I know most of my stuff is in conjunction with Barry, so Josh, I'm going to let you start off.
I saw Ed Wood in Barry's class, which was very good. I thought it was so funny. Nobody laughed in our class.
No one laughed except you, Josh.
I was laughing hard. I was like crying at the pull the strings thing. Freaking awesome.
Did you like when Lugosi had to wrestle with the octopus?
Marshall and I were like dying. That was so funny. I was like, I want to see this movie so bad. Does it look as bad as what?
It's awful. You know what I'm going to do? I've got a documentary about his life, and it has clips from all of his movies. I'll let you borrow that, because you don't want to sit through an Ed Wood movie. And the documentary is only 50 minutes long.
Oh, okay. Really. Well, because he splices the actual footage of the squid, right, with that stuff, so it just looks awful.
Yeah, stock footage. Yeah, it doesn't match at all.
So funny. So I loved Ed Wood. And then saw Kung Fu Panda, which was awesome. So you need to see it.
Okay, I will. I will make a point of it, because everyone's saying how good it is. I'll see it this week.
The action scenes are so cool.
I love how the training sequence where they show like different animals fighting. I love the snake, the way he fights.
Yeah.
It's so freaking cool.
Well, that and like the turtle. I was so like in love with the turtle. I was like, this is so cool.
And the chopsticks battle between Dustin Hoffman's character and Black's character. That is one of the best action scenes of the year, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's freaking awesome. So way better than I expected. And then Hellboy 2 again, which was better because I didn't have my mom hating it the whole time with me. So
yeah, isn't it better when you don't have someone influencing you that way?
Yes.
It's like, okay, I can actually enjoy this movie now.
Because I think I still would have been disappointed by it, but I wouldn't have like been so mad at it like I was. But
yeah,
so totally. I enjoyed it a lot better.
Cool.
So,
and I don't know, most of my stuff, I actually watched movies. You know, I'm a good chunk through Gears 2, about halfway through, so hopefully I'll be finished next week. And then I've got to get Banjo-Kazooie done, and I've got the new Scene It, and I've got such a backlog of video games, but this isn't a video game show, so let's go ahead and move on from that. But most of what I saw was at the Denver Film Festival, which I know Barry's seen more of. Do you want to hit a couple of highlights? I know we're going to do like a full-on wrap-up next week. But
Yeah. At the Denver Film Festival, saw His Name Was Jason, a documentary on the
film. That's why we have the Jason masks.
That's right. 30 Years of Friday the 13th. This is a great film. It completely dissects everything you've ever want to know about the series, really. I mean, it's very thorough for 90 minutes.
Absolutely.
I mean, not only is it everybody they could possibly find who's involved with the series, who's still around.
Pretty much, if you're alive, you're in this movie.
That's right. But, I mean, it talks about all the spinoffs, I mean, how there was a Nintendo game and a television series, and even the Angriest Video Game Nerd segment. I mean, they cover everything in this.
They covered that?
They actually talk about that, yeah. It basically, if it's
Oh, there's 13, Jason and I'm screwed.
Yeah, and they even interview the young lady from Sleepaway Camp too. That was a real surprise to see her on there. Yeah, it's very funny. And one of my favorite parts is where they gently tease how there's basically no narrative coherency in this series at all.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is also a very loving tribute to the series. It's very well produced. It's very entertaining. It's certainly one of the most entertaining documentaries. I think the only problem I have with it, as I've told you, is Tom Savini's hosting. It's great. It's great to see him, and he's very engaging. But the material he has, I didn't think it was all that funny.
The jokes were kind of sad, but
the rest of it was hilarious.
Most definitely. And I'm not a Friday the 13th fan. I've seen Jason X, I've seen Freddy versus Jason, I've seen the end of the first Friday the 13th. This was a great primer. Like, if you're like a horror person, want to watch a Friday the 13th movie, but you're just like, this is going to be too scary, this is a great way to take that edge off. They don't ruin all the kills, but there's plenty of blood, there's plenty of boobs. That's really the only way you can put that
right
in this documentary. I mean, this is gonna be rated R easily.
Mm-hmm.
But it really shows the fun and the campiness of it, and really takes a lot of the scary factor out of what is in these movies. Because they're not really meant to be all that scary. I don't know, they are, but they aren't.
If they ever intended to be scary, they definitely aren't now.
Yeah, this is true. But it's very well done. Everyone they talk to is very engaging, very fun to listen to. I mean, it's an hour and a half. It was at midnight, and I'm, you know, I go to bed pretty darn early, and I was loving this with the whole thing.
Great.
Yes.
Yeah, I hope people will check this out. It'll be on DVD in February in conjunction
February
with the
13th.
Release. February 13th, with the conjunction of the new film. Yeah, it's definitely worth to see. It's a highly highly entertaining, very well, very briskly paced documentary.
Yeah, and they bring up the fact that, you know, the storyline actually, you know, Friday the 13th 1, 2, and 3 all take place in the space of like 3 days.
Right.
So they're like, if you're looking for consistency, go somewhere else. But you know, they just there is no illusion about what these movies are.
Right.
They just have fun with them.
Yeah.
And we actually had our everyone who went to the movie got a Jason mask. And we got ours signed by Ari Lehman, who was there, the first Jason in the first Friday the 13th. Couldn't have been a nicer guy. Got, what, like a 45-minute interview with him?
Yeah, amazing, epic interview with Ari Lehman. He really laid it all out. He was a fantastic interview.
Yes. And then what else did you see?
Well, we saw The Wrestler together.
We saw The Wrestler. Oh, The Wrestler.
And I'll say just a little bit about it. What did you think?
I thought it was very good. It didn't quite live up to the hype that everyone's put out there for it. Mm. And I think it was more because I've run AV recently for a local indie pro wrestling circuit. So I know how that all that stuff that they show that everyone's like, this is so cool that they're showing this. I've seen it all already. With that said, this really established Aronofsky even more so as a great filmmaker, I think. People who have been critical of Aronofsky through the past, with Pi, it was, this is all, you know, just a student film. You know, in black and white, that was kind of the gimmick. In Requiem for a Dream, it was, oh, it's all these jump cuts about doing drugs. That's the whole movie. There's no, you know, it's all flash, no substance. With The Fountain, either people didn't get it, or they thought it was the special effects were hokey or whatever. And then, but with The Wrestler, it's all that stuff taken to the side. This is a very minimalistic film, I think. There's no flash, but there's so much substance to it.
Yes.
The human drama that's there. You could say that you were guided into that human drama and that human emotion in Requiem for a Dream and in The Fountain. There's none of that here. You're either going to like this guy or you're not. Mm-hmm. And you can't help but feel for Mickey Rourke's character.
Yes.
And Mickey Rourke, he was great in it. I still think the fact that this is a pro wrestling movie is going to hurt his chances at the Oscars. I really do. And I think it's sad because he takes the emotional gambit. I mean, he there's the really dark times. I mean, this is an Aronofsky movie. These aren't, you know, peaches, creams, puppy dogs, and rainbows. But that's there are light moments, and he takes those light moments and does just as much with them as he does as these really dark moments and the moments that he's in the ring. The wrestling is so good.
Yeah.
You forget that you're watching pro wrestling at the beginning. You're like, this guy's getting the crap beat out. Wait, no, it's pro wrestling. Granted, you still get hurt, which is shown over and over and over again. But what do you think? Ever so briefly. I don't want you to get into
it.
Ever so
briefly. I agree with you about most of that. Rourke's performance is startling in his vulnerability. And I thought Marissa Tomei and Evan Rachel Wood take these, you know, cliched roles. The stripper with the heart of gold and the estranged daughter. And I thought they did something really special with them.
And Marissa Tomei has shown just how good of shape she's in these days.
How she became the sexiest woman in movies right now, I don't know. But yeah, it's astonishing.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the piercings were real. That's like the first thing you're like,
what? Wow.
Yeah, that's all.
Like Janet Jackson?
Apparently. Yeah, yeah. But
let's discuss that in depth.
Yeah, no, I'm good with that. What I loved about Marissa Tomei is the fact that it was so striking, the difference in her appearance. She's the same person inside the strip club as she is outside the club. But they made such a striking difference in that from the flashy almost no clothes and the heavy makeup and everything to in real life, she really doesn't wear makeup. There's a scene where she's helping Mickey Rourke pick out some clothes for his daughter. And she's wearing pretty much no makeup and she looks so wonderful in it. And I think it really brought home the fact that she is not this person
right
in the strip club, you know, not this person who flaunts her body around. She's a real person, which I liked a lot.
Yes. Yeah, they're very good, and the film is very good. My problem with it is that, it had a lot of... it's like Rocky and the wrestling ring. There are the inevitable sports cliches, but Aronofsky and Mickey Rourke really turn them on their head and find some very raw, very real, and very passionate ways to approach this material.
Yeah.
It's a sad film, but...
It is. The ending is up to your interpretation. I'm not going to ruin that, spoil that, but I think it's pretty clear it ends one way if you listen and pay attention enough, but yes. I could see an argument for another way, too. Evan Rachel Wood, you know, a lot of the critics who have had something critical to say about it have said she didn't do much in the movie. She didn't have to do much in the movie, and she really maximized her time on the screen. Her moments with Mickey Rourke were gripping, I thought.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a very good film. I mean, like you said, I mean, I think you with your expectations lowered a little bit because really everybody has been kind of pinning this movie as the second coming of this Oscar season. I think it's an absolute lock for Best Actor, maybe Best Director, definitely Best Song by Bruce Springsteen.
Yes, it's such a good song. I want to hear it again because people were getting up and talking.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, just sit there and watch the credits, people. Come on.
Right. Yeah, it's a great film. Like you said, it really shows that Aronofsky has a lot more in him than a lot of the flashier films he's done. Although, you know...
I still argue that even inside all that flash, there are still great human stories in all of his films.
Definitely, definitely. For me, it's not as good as Requiem for a Dream, but at times it certainly is hard to watch as Requiem for a Dream.
Most definitely. And as far as like my ranking, I think I like The Fountain and Requiem for a Dream better, but that's not to say that it's a bad movie. I mean, I think I liked it better than Pi, but I love Pi. I mean, the fact that his filmography is this strong really speaks to that.
Yes.
And poor Josh wasn't able to make the screen.
I had to babysit.
Well, thank you for the people at the Denver Film Festival. They've been so accommodating to me and to both of us. And they've been absolutely wonderful for providing us with the interviews and the screenings. And certainly we'll do a wrap-up.
We had another interview too, didn't we?
We did. We've interviewed Peter Rosen, the director of Garrison Keillor, The Man on the Radio in the Red Shoes, the documentary of the Prairie Home Companion creator.
Which is I'm so bummed I missed it. I'm going to have to catch it. It's playing on American Masters next July, I guess.
July, yes.
But you got to see it and you liked that too.
It's a great film.
It's a great interview that we'll be putting that up too, along with Ari Lehman and all that fun stuff. But we also saw Spine Tingler.
That's right.
Which our listener, Robert, saw down in Texas, I guess last year with the director, and he had a nurse with him just in case, you know, someone passed out.
Perfect.
It's a movie about the life of William Castle. So if you like that schlock film and stuff and want to know about the guy, it's so good.
Did everybody who watched Matinee want to know if this is a true story?
Yes.
This is the real story, and it's wonderful.
That would make for a great double feature. It's so much fun. It shows how nice of a guy he was and how hardworking he was and that he wanted to do more than just these kind of movies. But yeah, it's just really good.
Yeah, it's funny how the Denver Film Festival has these deadly serious ones like movies about meth labs and Palestinian rockers and Sudanese rap artists, and yet here's two documentaries, one about Friday the 13th, one about William Castle, and they're so much fun.
They absolutely are. I love the fact that a lot of people, when you think documentary, you think, you know, of these really tough subjects, which is why I love Air Guitar Nation, which is why I love King of Kong, which is why I love these movies. They're just fun.
Yeah, and Spellbound, yeah. The documentaries don't always have to be about, you know, about the Holocaust. It could be enjoyable, yeah.
Most definitely. Well, okay, we've beaten that to death. I think we're going to do a good bit of a wrap-up next week. But let's go ahead and move on to the news. Do we want to talk about the Watchmen trailer?
Yeah, let's do all our trailers first. We've got a lot of trailers. Yeah.
So it came out. and the verdict is?
I think it looks like crap.
Do you?
Yeah. Honestly, it looks like crap. The visuals don't look bad.
They don't.
Just the music and everything is just like, this is not the tone that I was expecting.
But it doesn't mean that that's the music from the movie. No, it's probably just the music. But yeah, I agree. I think the music really castrates that trailer. Because otherwise, the visuals are so terrific. The performances, for the most part, look good. Although, I'm just kind of disappointed with some of the stuff we saw.
Yeah.
I'm going to see this. There's no question. I'm hoping for the best for this.
Yeah.
Somehow there's this little voice nagging in the back of my head, which I should probably go to a psych about, but it's saying that it's possible that Watchmen can't be made into a good movie. I think we're going to see the best possible representation on the screen. I have no reason to doubt that. I'm hoping for the best, but I'm still trying to keep my I'm not like geeking out about this in a big way, which I think is probably good because it wouldn't be fair to any movie to do this, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well, and I think the biggest thing is like if Rorschach didn't sound like Christian Bale, it'd be like, I think it would have been fine. But as soon as he started speaking, I was like, that's freaking Batman.
This is
Batman.
Where we need Ethan doing the Batman voice. Yeah. And then, yeah. Okay.
And
yeah. I'm hopeful. Yeah. I mean, we had more talking and the talking wasn't horrifyingly bad.
No, but I got to say, I thought Malin Ackerman, more of a Valley Girl than I wanted for
the Silk Spectre.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
we didn't see any of Carla
Gugino. You saw her in that short bit that was that they posted on Yahoo Movies about the women of Watchmen. She looked great in that, but yeah, otherwise you really get no sense of her, or most importantly, Patrick Wilson as Night Owl.
Yeah, yeah, and they need to make a trailer that like explains to people what the movie's about, because even afterwards, my parents
about?
Were like, "What's
like,
this about?"
I can't even begin to explain.
Yeah, I was like,
this.
I can't.
Because right now it's just us; it's the fanboys who want to see this movie. But yeah, otherwise, most people have no idea what it's about, and they just see this big, thick graphic novel that's the size of a phone book, and they're like, "I don't want to."
It's intimidating.
Take the time.
Yeah, screw it. And I'm hoping that we're wrong.
I'm hoping we're wrong, but you know what? If the movie blows, I would not be against a better director taking this on 20 years from now and trying again.
And we'll have to see. I mean, part of it is we haven't really seen a movie that required more emotionally from Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
I mean, 300 did not require that much emotion. There's a lot of you know, men in loincloths screaming, you know, which is cool. I mean, it's perfect. It's what 300 needed. I'm hoping this is going to be a very big test for Snyder, I think.
Well, I don't think it, I think I've said this before, but I just don't think it can be made into a good movie. Like, well, like you were, what you were saying. I just don't think it gives itself to be a movie. It
at the same time, Lord of the Rings, I mean, you know, granted they're movies about walking, but, you know, it, they were, Peter Jackson pulled off what was thought to be impossible.
Well, they're emotionally rich, and for all the stuff that he took out, the stuff that he left in was very audacious and really daring, and, you know, there's so many things going on in just one of those films, and he managed to compress that incredible narrative and make it cohesive and thrilling.
But I'm not even talking about the narrative. I'm just talking about, like, all the sublayers to the text and, like, just the way that it works as a book.
Well, it'll never work that way. It'll never work that way. We know that. In that way, Watchmen will never be made. But it's in terms of just, you know, what it requires of a film, that we get these characters and this story, that alone is a huge, huge task. And we know that it looks like the look of the film, yes, you pretty much held up the comic book next to the viewfinder and made sure they match up. But yeah, I mean, if these characters don't come off as real, if it comes across as sexy actors in costumes, then it's doomed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and we are going to see the Little Manhattan too, I guess. So I'm wondering if that's going to, prepared for that.
It was in the trailer on Spike TV.
Well,
somebody blew up a picture of it. I was like, oh, thank you.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, I'm knowing it's there is good enough for me. I don't think I need to dissect.
I love Dr. it. Manhattan. I love it when the fanboy community does it, like with the Silver Surfer thing. I love it when they're like, you know, let's blow that up and examine it.
Well, that was just funny. The rise of the
It's bad enough to have penis envy, but when it's a superhero, that's just not good for your mental psyche. I'm sorry.
Okay, shall we move
on? Talking from experience.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to Star Trek because we were talking too much Watchmen as it is. Star Trek trailer hit too.
Good. Yeah. I liked it.
Yeah. Huh? I liked it for the most part too. It's not the best Star Trek trailer ever. I am a little concerned, but at the same time, I have, you know, faith in J.J. Abrams. I'm willing to trust him, so I'm hoping it'll be good. I was happy to hear Simon Pegg's Scottish accent be somewhat close to Scotty. You know, I mean, it wasn't an imitation. It was him doing a Scottish accent. It happened to sound close, which is great.
Good.
I think the special effects look amazing.
Yeah, my concern is that I see a whole lot of Vulcan. You know, Vulcans aren't emotional with a whole lot of emotion in the trailer. That's my concern. But that's me as a big Star Trek fanboy.
Yeah, I'm not a Star Trek fan, so for me, this is like good. I can finally maybe enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. I hope so. I'm tired of Star Trek sucking. That's really what it comes down to, and I'm hoping this turns it around.
Yeah,
it's been sucking since 1996. I'd say since First Contact.
You didn't like First Contact?
No, I mean ever since First Contact.
Were you not a fan of Deep Space Nine?
Mm.
Okay.
No, I watched Voyager for Jerry Ryan and no other reason. Jerry Ryan and Robert Picardo, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I said this before, but I just hope it makes space, like, intimidating. I don't think we've had a movie like that besides, like, 2001.
That Sunshine? Like that.
A little bit, but then it turned into 28 Days Later.
Yeah, we're going to leave it alone because Barry hasn't seen it yet. He's going to borrow it from me and see it. So, okay, any other news? That's really all that I wanted to talk about.
We have another spoof coming out. It's called Dance Flick.
Is it Aaron Seltzer and Jason Freeberg behind it?
No, it's the Wayans brothers. And actually, the trailer, I laughed during it.
Okay.
Which is something that I haven't done for any of those trailers. So I there was like probably three jokes I actually kind of chuckled at. So I would actually, just to support a good spoof, would actually pay to go see it.
Good. If it's good, absolutely. If it's good comedy, it's good comedy.
And I mean, I like the first Scary Movie, and I think that you like I'm going to get you sucker and stuff, right? The early film. So it's like, you know, granted it's
that was Keenan Ivory Wayans as opposed to the Wayans brothers. So that's a very important distinction.
You know, although Keenan did direct Little Man and White
did
Chicks.
He?
Yeah, he
oh,
directed.
Never
yeah.
mind.
So it's a Wayans
I stand
family
corrected.
Enterprise.
Yeah, I'm good. Okay.
I saw a national sneak preview of Bolt last night, and they had the trailer for Race to Witch Mountain. I was very pleasantly surprised.
Really?
It looks exactly what I was hoping it would be. Yes, it's a children's film, but it looks exciting. The special effects looks great. It looks like an action movie. The Rock, you know, he's kind of there to be charming and funny, which it looks like he's going to be. This movie looks like it's really going to deliver. It looks like a summer movie, and it's opening up in March.
Does it look like it has the same feel as the original movies?
More high tech and certainly more, and which is fine for me because for me, I think that would be too campy now. But I think as far as like the kids being weird and clearly from another planet, I think that comes across quite nicely.
Very cool.
Yep.
Spoiler. Have you got anything
else?
I'm trying
to look and see what else. Kate,
it's okay if we don't.
There's a new Harry Potter trailer, but I was kind of watching that when you were booting up the thing, and I'm not a Twitter fan. I don't think I have anything else.
Okay.
Oh, actually, yeah. This is I forgot about this. Eli Roth is directing a scene from Inglourious Basterds, Tarantino hired him to do that. I guess there's like a movie within a movie, and he's directing the movie.
Oh, kind of like so it's Majestic. Like Sin City when Tarantino guested and directed that one sequence.
Yeah.
Or like The Majestic when you had Bruce Campbell in the little campy movie.
Okay, so I mean that would give that. Hopefully Roth's smart about it and does something that would have people that hate him, you know.
Give him another chance because, I mean, hearing him in interviews and stuff, he definitely knows what he's talking about. I'd like to see him try to do something maybe not quite so grindhouse exploitation.
But it's the Inglourious Bastard, so he'll be directing a Nazi propaganda film, right?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, never
like
mind.
One of those Nazi S&M films. So you know Eli Roth, this is like right up his alley. So of course Tarantino called him.
I like him.
Yep. Okay.
Somebody has to.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk some Gilliam. And, yeah.
Get your geek on in a Geek Label t-shirt. Shirts for gamers, geeks, and tech heads. If you like games, movies, computers, or comics, we've got your new t-shirt waiting for you. Let Geek Label change your life. You can go from...
Oh, hell no.
To...
Oh, hell yeah.
In the blink of a t-shirt. And the best part, every design is available in all kinds of silky, smooth colors and shirt styles. Short and long sleeve tees. And for the ladies, ooh, ringers, raglans, ladies tees, even spaghetti strap tees. Feel fly, walk tall, be irresistible to the opposite sex. Died, even we can't do all that. Hundreds of designs and they're all off the hook, yo. You pick the style, you pick the color, we do the rest. Cause that's how we roll. Get your geek on at Geek Label. That's one word, geeklabel.com.
You know, I guess it'd help if we actually talked about theatrical and DVD releases too. We spent so much time talking about everything else. Let's just do that, and then we'll get into our topic. So what hit theaters this weekend, sir?
Bond, James Bond, in the Quantum of Solace, and then in limited release, you had Danny Boyle, Slumdog Millionaire.
And you've seen Slumdog and really can't talk about it yet.
Cannot talk about it, nope.
So do you think maybe next week we'll be able to? Because I'm seeing it Monday night.
Okay, yeah, by Friday of, by next week we'll be able to talk about it. Yeah.
Cool. And
I saw Bond.
You're the only one who did. See, we didn't get home from the Denver Film Fest until 4 o'clock yesterday morning. And I didn't get to sleep till about 4:30 and then woke up at about 7:30. So yesterday was blown. But you saw Bond.
I did see Bond. I don't like Bond movies at all. Uh-huh. So,
what did you think about Casino Royale?
I appreciated it, but they played poker for like 2 hours and that wasn't really my thing. So, but I mean, the opening chase scene was freaking awesome. This one is like nonstop action, but for being the shortest Bond film, it's so long. Mm. It just feels so long.
Ooh,
and
okay,
it picks up immediately after Casino Royale, and I only seen that one like once, so I had no idea what was going on at all. I didn't remember any of the characters, and we got out. My dad's like, "That was awesome because blah 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 blah," and I was like, "I don't know any of these characters. I don't even remember anything about the first one." So if you're not like a hardcore fan of Casino Royale, I don't think you'd like it at all. That's the first problem. It's so the action scenes are so choppy and
so it's like he took cues from Greengrass.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Paul Greengrass, Bourne movies.
Oh yeah. And I mean it's like it's all handheld style like the Bourne movies and I haven't seen the Bourne movies, so I didn't find that like changing it like a problem, but it was a problem because you couldn't connect with the action scenes. So
that's really disappointing because I liked Casino Royale a lot.
And the theme song was annoying.
Yeah, I've heard most people complain about that.
And it just was like it's not a terrible movie, but it's not what you would expect to see after Casino. So
okay. It's a shame.
And I don't know what else they can do. Like what else they're gonna have his character do.
Okay.
So I don't know. I know David Chen like really hated it. Did you read his review?
No.
Oh, it's awesome.
I've heard enough bad things that I'm just like, eh.
But it's not a bad movie. That's the thing. It's just like you're not gonna like it very much.
It sounds like it's check it on DVD.
Yeah,
pretty much. Which just sounds like I'm gonna do. There's far too much stuff coming up that I can't waste my time.
Well, I haven't seen the Star Trek trailer yet, so I will see Quantum of Solace because I want to see the Trek trailer on the big screen. So, right. And I saw Bolt, which I loved.
We can't. Let's save that for next week's movies.
Okay.
Because we gotta talk about what's hitting theaters next week anyway.
Okay.
But what DVDs are hitting this week?
This week is WALL-E 1 and 3 Disc Special Edition and Tropic Thunder, the rated and unrated cut.
I just want to see a booty sweat commercial.
What did I say before the podcast? That's the
Oh, yeah.
What do you call You People Edition? Who yeah. What do you mean You People Edition?
Yeah, they're nice. And I just want to see some Simple Jack.
That's true.
I don't know why.
Please.
Yeah. You okay, enough of that. Yes. You guys like that movie way too much. I'm not going to buy it, but you know I will watch it again for sure. That's all we had on DVD?
That's basically the abbreviated list. I mean, last week's went on for a while. I mean, there's also Sister of the Traveling Pants 2, Doctor Who Season 4.
Because you didn't – I gave you a new crap title of the week.
Yeah, yeah. That would be Star Trek, the original series remastered. No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. It's Hannah Montana, the complete first season.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then Werner Herzog's Encounters at the End of the World. Great movie.
Have you heard Hannah Montana's new song? It's so awful. I don't know how she's popular.
I don't make a habit of listening.
No, it's just on the radio. I'm like, what is this? And my ears started bleeding, and it was her song.
Because there's a duet she does with Travolta. In Bolt, and it's actually very good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, this isn't like, really good. This is like teeny hard rock techno. It's like,
is it that Seven Things I Hate About You song?
No, it's worse than that. It's actually worse than that song. Really?
That's possible?
Yeah, it's...
Dude.
So,
you know, it's not our demographic, though. I mean, you know, if we were, like, if this were the 80s and we were as old as we are now, we would
not
have,
I own the Josie and the Pussycat soundtrack. Come on.
Yeah, and I'd rather listen to, like, Slim Whitman than this.
Slim Whitman?
It's bad.
Wow.
It's bad.
Pull out the Mars Attacks reference. Well done, sir. Nice.
So just keep away from the radio.
Wow.
Yeah.
But check out Slim Whitman.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Okay. Topic of the week. What are we talking about again?
Terry Gilliam's 12 Monkeys.
Is that his most successful film?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you haven't seen any Gilliam films and you're willing to venture into the territory after we talked about Brazil last week, I think this is a very good one to start with. No?
Nope. I'd say Fisher King.
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't go with Monkeys. I think that would really turn people off. It's a challenging movie.
It is.
You know, if you're not willing to go with it, it's one of these movies you got to watch every scene, otherwise you're going to be completely lost.
This is true. I didn't really get an idea of what was going on until about the third or fourth time I saw it. But it was just so fascinating of a film.
Yeah, it's brilliantly constructed, but I think it's so difficult. And I think it's, I love the film and I loved it the first time I saw it, but it's so grim and it's so complex. I mean, I think you really have to be up for the challenge. Had Bruce Willis and Brad Pitt and Madeline Stone up in the stars, I don't think this film would have opened.
That's very possible. But as we mentioned last week, this is the film that gave me respect for Brad Pitt as an actor.
Oh, same with Bruce Willis. I don't think he's ever topped his work in 12 Monkeys.
Yeah, I firmly believe that the movie is rated R because Brad Pitt's flipping off the audience for about half the movie. That's just the way that his character acts, you know, yeah. And he's just pointing a finger to him, but... Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the story really quick.
It's a remake of a French film called La Jetée, which came out, I believe, in 1964, maybe. I could be wrong about that. It's a time travel story about how in the future the world is essentially crap. A biological virus destroyed the world, and now we're living underground, and time travel is possible. So we're sending agents back in time in order to find out how the world ended and how we could possibly fix it.
Could this be a sequel to I Am Legend?
It's something like that,
kind of sort of, or 28 Days Later. Yeah,
it fits. It's very grim. It's very dark, and it's certainly the bleakest vision of the future possible. Among the individuals they're sending sending back to the future are this individual by the name of Cole, played by Bruce Willis, who is a prisoner, and he's been sent basically to gather evidence.
Because they figured the reasoning is that the past has happened. There's no changing it. We're going to see if we can find a way to find a cure now.
Right. And every time he goes back, the only information he really gets is that there is something called the Army of the 12 Monkeys that ultimately is the reason for the downfall of humanity.
Or at least thought is thought to be.
Believed to be, yeah, and then we'll leave it at that. And yes. That's essentially the story. And during his adventures, he comes across a character played by Madeline Stowe, who basically is able to piece together the puzzle. And Brad Pitt, seemingly innocuous, insane individual who doesn't seem to have a part in all of it, but then ends up being one of the key figures.
And one of the things that needs to be mentioned is that, first of all, the whole process of getting someone ready to be sent back in time is very Gilliam-esque. The process of sending someone back in time is an exact science, shall we say, to be very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel the perspective of the film is so off-kilter, you find yourself really identifying with Cole's character because you have about as much idea of what's going on as he does, which I think was a very that was a real plus to the film, I thought, overall.
Definitely. There's a very just... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Josh.
Oh,
we're just kind of going back and forth.
I'm trying to think because I saw it so long ago and I don't really remember what it's about. So, no, I mean, like, I remember the basic story, but I don't remember how it ends.
Okay. Well, and, that's good. That's good. You don't remember it. So when next time you see it, it'll be completely fresh.
Yeah. I just know there's like the stuff with him in the airport, right? Yep. And that, like, that all right. plays out. I think I remember what Brad Pitt's character is relevancy to the film, but like, I just don't remember. I remember just being like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. So, which is why you have to watch it like 3 or 4 times. And then you start piecing things together more and more. And
yeah. But I remember like once you finally get it, you're like, oh,
yeah.
I'm
yeah.
smart.
It's amazing. Yes.
There's some disturbing elements to it. I always particularly remember this where Bruce Willis is in prison and he hears that voice. And you're never sure exactly. Yeah. And they make it clear what the voice is eventually, but it's very disturbing the way they integrate that into the story. And the moment where there's a sequence of Bruce Willis is sent to the wrong time, and all of a sudden he's in the middle of this war.
Was it World War II?
I believe
Korean
so.
War or something?
Yeah, I think it is World War II, and it eventually plays back into the story. It all does connect eventually, but you really have to be patient with the film. And on one hand, the star power is what drew, you know, is one of the reasons it was such a hit and what draws you into the film. But the movie doesn't make it easy for you. You do, as you said, you share Bruce Willis's disillusionment. You share his terror. You share his completely inability to grasp what's going on from moment to moment until finally, I think by the time he gets to the present time, the second version of the present time, where everything starts to really, really disturbingly start to piece together like a big,
especially once
sick
you figure
puzzle.
Out exactly what Bruce Willis was watching as a kid.
Yes.
All I'm gonna say.
Yeah.
But that's so disturbing.
And I love the music. It's got, I can't remember the gentleman who did the score, but it's got a mixture of this really goofy accordion theme with some really somber violin music, plus the theme music to Vertigo welded in there too. I mean, really wonderful, eclectic score. Mm-hmm. It has, you know, this is not a spoiler. In fact, you could pretty much guess it, but it has really one of the most downbeat endings you could possibly
yeah.
imagine. So, and I say that just to prepare people. This is it's dark, dark, dark stuff. I dare say this is the darkest film that Gilliam has ever made.
Even more than Tyler.
Or me, 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 me.
Yeah, it's darker because there's no escape. I mean,
there is no humor in this movie, really. And Ethan just corrected us. Apparently, the picture's from World War One.
World War One. Thank you. Sorry, Ethan.
But Eliza Rose just.
Whereas, you know, Brazil had some very funny things, you know, subversively funny things in it. 12 Monkeys, there really isn't much humor in it at all. I think I can remember like one or two jokes at most.
Pitt has some very funny scenes, especially in the asylum early on. But during the course of the movie, his character gets crazier and crazier. I would say it's darker than Thailand just because I know you blocked that film completely out of your memory. But if you remember the way that movie ends, you know, this minor spoiler for all you Thailand fans or whatever. But it does suggest that the girl did escape. You know, albeit with her sanity not necessarily intact, but she does escape from that horrific lifestyle that she's living. In this sense, and with 12 Monkeys, I would say that it basically is saying that no matter what we do, we're screwed. So I'd say it was very pessimistic, whereas Thailand is saying that despite all the horrors this girl is witnessing, because she's a child, she's able to kind of look at it indifferently.
Okay. I kind of want to do a little bit of spoilers because I want to talk about the end of 12 Monkeys really quick.
Let's do some spoilers.
Hang on here. I'm going to.
Came out in 1995.
Here.
Sorry for.
Well,
spoiling
yeah,
for you.
But, you know, Gilliam's enough of a rough
That's
read.
True.
Listen to. Skip ahead about a minute starting now. Do you think that they really believed that they couldn't stop the future?
I believe that it was either that or just live in that future. And I think striving for change is better than just sitting there and letting that horrible world. Exist.
Well, because the girl, the old lady's sitting right next to the guy at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
That was...
Right.
You could go either way with that.
Yeah, you could. And I would even say that maybe she didn't even realize who she was sitting next to, or she was one of the first people to realize the extent of what was happening. But I think the ultimate twist, as you were saying at the airport, is that not only was Bruce Willis a factor to what happened, but it just shows that you can't possibly change what has already happened. Ultimately, you know, this movie is the anti Back to the Future. You can't go back in time and fix things and switch things and switch things. It's already happened. Mankind's fate is predestined. You know, if you want to go in that way.
Fair enough.
But
yeah,
you know,
it's possible that she was just. Getting everything from, you know, the bird's eye view, and we're done. So our minute is now up. I want to try to keep the spoilers to a minimum as much as
Definitely,
possible.
Yeah.
It's a really good movie. It's well worth checking out. If you're a bit more of an adventurous movie goer, I think it's worth starting with 12 Monkeys. But if you aren't and kind of want to ease your way into Terry Gilliam's special brand of insanity, Fisher King is a better way to start, you'd say?
I'd say Fisher King, yeah, because it is actually lighter going at times. It does have its dark elements, but it's a very sweet film. 12 Monkeys, although it's certainly, I would say it's a thrilling film, and it's incredibly challenging and really engrossing, but it's a rough one. But
I think that may actually be my favorite Gilliam film, is 12 Monkeys.
It's one of his best. I'd say one of his absolute best. I don't know if it's my favorite, but yeah, it's definitely one of his best. If you like Bruce Willis, the actor, as opposed to Bruce Willis, the action star, this you can't get any better. His performance in 12 Monkeys, I thought, is incredible. Very raw, very challenging. I'd say the equivalent of Mickey Rourke's performance in The Wrestler.
Very true.
His performance is an open wound throughout the whole film, and it's something to watch. And Pitt, as we've said, this is the movie that certainly changed my mind. I mean, prior to 12 Monkeys, he was the long-haired guy.
Legends of the Fall,
Interview with the Vampire. He does 12 Monkeys, and it's like, who is this guy? He's capable of... I mean, his performance in 12 Monkeys is kind of a precursor to what he plays in Fight Club, although I thought he was much better in 12 Monkeys.
It is kind of an extension of his character in 12 Monkeys, but yeah.
Do you guys like Monty Python at all? Or
I do. I just...
Never talk about it.
I've watched... Oh, good God. As a child of the 80s, you watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail so freaking many times.
I understand that. Yeah.
Like, I think I have it downstairs, or I've gotten rid of it, or I'm getting ready to. Just because I've seen it so many times, I don't think I ever need to see it again.
Yeah, Monty Python and the Holy Grail and Grease, the two movies I've watched like on a loop in college.
Yeah, I got away with Grease once, and that was enough.
Oh, okay. Well, I grew up with Grease. Well, anyway, and it's nice, and I appreciate bringing it up because we do need to note that Gilliam does make fun, enjoyable, lighthearted, cheerful movies. But I guess it seems like after Brazil, he made some really dark. Even the ending, minor spoiler of Munchausen, is kind of like Brazil in some ways.
Kind of
the nature of what is and isn't real, and yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But then you have Time Bandits, and he has done some very fun stuff, which we will get to. I'm sure we're going to revisit Gilliam. I just don't want to do like 2 months solid of one director, have everyone get burnt out, and then move on to burn someone else out, burn everyone out on a different director. If we do three or four episodes on someone and then come back to it later.
Sure. We also have Brothers Grimm is a pretty lighthearted film too.
Which one?
Brothers Grimm.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is. So, okay. Should we just leave it there, you think?
It feels like a short episode.
It kind of is. Although, I mean, we're a good 40 minutes into it, so we're doing okay.
No, it's great. It's great. We didn't mention Christopher Plummer's performance in it, which is awesome.
Very true.
Yeah, definitely see it. It's I'd say one of the best time travel movies. It takes a very, very hard-nosed take on the element of time travel. But it's a brilliant film, and it really complements L'Agité very well. And yeah, I'd say it's one of the finest science fiction films. Period.
It's a remake that doesn't suck.
Imagine that.
Wow. It's a foreign remake that doesn't suck.
Even better yet. Even rarer still, yeah.
Yes. So if you want to let us know what you think about it as well. Should we go ahead and talk about what is hitting theaters this week, and then you can talk about your film from last night?
Absolutely. Disney's Bolt, with the voices of John Travolta and Haley... Hannah Montana. Miley Cyrus. And
I thought you were about to say Haley Joel Osment, so you know.
I think I almost did. And then Twilight, based on the novel you might have heard of, directed by Christopher.
Did you hear what happened last week with the Twilight, like the autograph thing?
Yeah.
What happened? In
San Francisco?
What happened?
It's like
Slash film put this up, we'll put it
back
to it. Yeah.
They I guess there's supposed to be some signing with the guy that plays the main vampire or something. And
Goofy looking dude?
I think so.
The guy from Harry Potter? Okay.
And or one of the cast members. Yeah. And like it was in a mall and
they planned on like 300 people.
Yeah, 300 people. Like 5,000 or something showed up, like some ridiculous number. And then they canceled the screening because of safety reasons.
Oh no.
And there was like a mob. Like there's like a riot.
Wow.
Like it kind of makes me want to go see Twilight opening weekend, and even if it's an awesome movie, just yell this movie sucked just to see if I try to get beat up by a bunch of 10-year-old girls.
There's like it's like the scariest. I mean, I don't know any other fan base that's like
really
this violent.
Never mind.
Well, I mean, they were violent at Comic-Con from what I've heard and everywhere, so it's like watch out for those Twilight fans. Jesus.
Well, the Star Trek geeks are telling you and Star Wars geeks are telling you to look out for the Twilight fans. That's a scary time, my friend.
Well, it's like Beatlemania when the Beatles were in their prime. You know, girls would like, you know, rip clothes off and of each other and
yeah, but
the Beatles.
We've even been to a Backstreet Boys concert, and yes. I've never experienced that.
No. Well, the Backstreet Boys are almost a fantasy. I mean, these guys are... I mean, seriously, the Twilight characters, they're like the embodiment of like a girl's 13-year-old fantasy. They're quiet, they're shy, they're...
Chaste.
They're vampires, they're ageless.
They're chaste.
Chaste?
you know, there's no hanky panky going on. So, you know,
gotcha.
You can be safer in these vampires.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're not quite the Lost Boys. Yeah, exactly.
Wow, the Lost Boys. There you go. That there's a double feature for you: Twilight followed by the Lost Boys.
So maybe we should go see Twilight and just wear a sign that says, like, I hate Twilight on our shirt or
Why
something.
Do you want to get in a fight with 10-year-old girls?
Okay, see, that's like in Die Hard with a Vengeance, when Bruce Willis has to go in the middle of Harlem wearing that special sign.
Right, it's like that. You guys are going to get
You're
killed.
Taking your life in your own
killed.
Hands.
Well, I just want to cause a destruction on some minor level.
Yeah, but it's going to, yeah, but when it's your destruction, not so good, sir. You'd find a way to channel
we'll
that.
Just go, okay, we'll just go mess up the projector or something.
Something, yeah.
I'm hoping the movie's terrific. I do. This is a very good director. This is Catherine Hardwicke. She did 13, excellent film. And although I wasn't the biggest fan of it, The Nativity Story, she can direct. And this is another film about kind of a young girl's coming of age, kind of like those other two. So I'm very curious to see how it plays.
I'm kind of scared that this is going to be like Disturbia, where everyone, I go to the movie and everyone in the theater loves it. And I'm like, this is the biggest pile of crap I've ever seen. Hmm. I'll give it a 7. Sorry. Okay.
But you know, I mean, like I was telling you before the show, I mean, this if it's not a good movie and it's not faithful to the book, it has one weekend tops because the critics will hate it, and certainly if the fans hate it, then that's death. Because you can say what you want about High School Musical 3, the fans have loved it and the critics have been very nice to it. But I mean, if this thing sucks,
Did
it's
you
got one
thing?
Weekend tops.
No.
Bruce Willis was on David Letterman, and they superimposed him with a really bad wig into his High School Musical 3 singing next to Zac Efron on the basketball court, apparently.
I hope that's on Hulu.
Did he like it?
I think it is. Huh?
Did he like it?
I don't have no idea, but they're talking about how he's actually a star in High School Musical 3.
And oh.
Yeah, he's singing off-key. It's awesome.
That's great.
I don't know what to think about Twilight. There's been such a fervor that I'm kind of inclined to not like it again.
Oh, let's just see it before we
And that's
judge
the thing.
It.
It's like, I really don't want to, but the more I'm talking about it, the more it means I'm going to have to.
Out of all the movies we've had to see this year just to see, because based on what audiences think, I say this is like the easiest. I mean, think about like all this terrible, terrible
but
films.
But if it's awful, I can't make fun of it in the theater, because then we'll have people beating me up. Or trying to, whatever. You know. I don't
13-year-old girls, I think that's a fight you can afford to step away from.
Yeah, but if it's like 200 of them, that's my argument, you know? If you're in this theater and, yeah, okay. We should leave that alone. But you liked Bolt.
Bolt is great, yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Let's move on to Bolt, yes.
Yeah, by the way, Bolt. Bolt is terrific.
Let's move on to it. Yes.
Yes. I'd say it's the closest CGI animated movie in a while that's almost up to the level of Pixar. And I mean that in a really big compliment. It is it's the equivalent of something like Kung Fu Panda, like we mentioned. The animation is fantastic. The opening action sequence is one of the best of the year, by the way.
Really?
And the movie is incredibly funny, but I think what ultimately makes the movie work so well is that you love the three characters. I loved Bolt. Travolta really makes him very endearing and very stubborn and very delusional. I loved Rhino the hamster and Mittens the cat. These three, whenever the movie is just about those three, whenever they focus on the three, it's really something special. There are times when I was laughing so hard I was crying. It is that freaking funny. That hamster is such a riot. And yeah, I couldn't believe how exciting it was. Like, it reminded me of like the best action sequences that Pixar can do. But overall, like I said, I want to emphasize that it is about the characters. The characters are the best thing about this movie, and that's really what makes it special. I love that it comes two weeks after Madagascar 2, which is so forgettable, so exposable. And here you've got a great, great CGI animated movie that is definitely worth comparing to Kung Fu Panda. And I hope it does that kind of business, because it is that good.
You dropped the P word in relation to this movie.
The P word? Which one?
Oh, yeah.
The studio?
Pixar.
Yeah, you said it's almost on par.
It's almost on par. And you know, yeah, let me be clear about that. I mean, it's not a Pixar movie, and you know, it's not quite there, but it's close. It's it's one of the best I've seen of its caliber this year, and I would compare it to Kung Fu Panda, because I would say that is almost, on the Pixar level.
Yeah, but it's awesome.
See, I'm glad, because you and Josh have been really psyched to see Bolt, and I haven't been, and I'm glad to see that it's paying off. That's coming through on the potential that you saw there. So I mean, yeah. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be number one over the weekend.
Did you
see
it in 3D?
I did.
Was it cool?
It's great. It's great in 3D, although it's fine without. It's not a movie you have to see in 3D, but there are certain moments, especially like a sequence that takes place in Las Vegas, where it really does just enhance the whole thing.
But what I like right now is that I didn't even know that you'd seen it in 3D. If you'd seen it in 3D and it had been bad, you would have pointed that out, and you didn't get a headache, I'm guessing.
No, I did not. No,
sweet.
Not at all. Yeah, yeah. Thank goodness for digital 3D. But yeah, I'm predicting that Bolt will be number one because, you know, it's G, and I think the word of mouth will really help it, especially after this week's screening. Twilight, even if it is fantastic, it really is, you know, it's PG-13. It's a vampire movie. It's, you know, it's got a pre-chosen audience, basically the High School Musical 3 audience. So I wouldn't be surprised if this coming weekend would be like the biggest of the week of the year.
Oh,
because
really?
Because Bolt and Twilight, I think that'll really make them all turn out. Plus people coming to see Bond and the people who still haven't seen High School Musical 3.
I was going to ask you something, but my brain just shot it out, so I don't remember anymore.
Because you remember?
Just because.
Shut it up.
Yeah. Okay, then. Well, I'm actually going to play the voicemail from Billy Flynn in post because I'm still having issues, but we'll talk about it next week, but I want to play it. But let's talk about what's hitting. We got theaters this week. Let's hit DVD for next week.
It's DVD
really
next
bad
week. Yeah, it's pretty unfortunate. You got Hancock and the single edition, the unrated edition, and the two-disc unrated special edition.
Josh.
Fist wiener!
Okay, there you go. I know you've been having that pent up and, yeah. Okay. What else is coming out?
Fred Claus, because you've all been waiting for Fred Claus to come on DVD, almost a year since its theatrical release. New Line decides to punish us with Fred Claus for the holidays. Thank you. I need a coal in my stocking. Space Chimps, which nobody saw, so it'll be like a premiere when it comes on DVD next week.
A special turd-shaped premiere.
Unfortunately, not a film about Dave Minkus. Meet Dave, starring Eddie Murphy, one of the biggest flops of the year. Superman, Doomsday, the two-disc edition, as you've
this
said.
This pisses me off.
It's a double dip of, what, a
it's
few
a double
months?
Dip for, like, less than 6 months. I liked the movie, don't get me wrong. But do I need a double dip that this actually makes me upset at DC Animated? Because I don't need a double dip this close out. I know it's in conjunction with the Blu-ray release and whatever. But still, really? I already spent my money once. You want me to go blow another $15 on that? Come on, no.
It's a good film, though. You are right. It's a very good film. Yeah. And the one good title of the week. In fact, this is a great movie. In fact, you know, this is still my favorite Wes Anderson movie, his debut film, Bottle Rocket on Criterion.
It's a very distinct departure from the rest of his movies.
Over There Will Be Blood? Or are you thinking of the different
Anderson? Wes Anderson.
That's
this is Paul the Thomas. Rushmore.
Oh, I get those guys confused all the time. I don't know why.
As long as you don't get P.T. Anderson with Paul W.S. Anderson.
Then no one will hurt you.
That would be bad.
That'd be very bad.
That's called
a geek faux pas. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Wes Anderson, he's the guy who did, you know, the Royal Tenenbaums and The Life Aquatic. And
yeah, but it definitely has a different feel than the rest of his movies.
Yeah, well, it's low budget. It's a small little caper film. But again, this is one where the characters are key, and they're so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Is that about it?
I believe so.
All right, well, if you care to shoot us an email, by all means do. You can email us podcast, Barry, Josh, Ethan, Dave. See, I moved you up in the list a little bit, sir.
Hey.
At screengeeks.com, you can also give us a call at 319-387-1804. Maybe switching us to a new phone number, but we'll see about that. But yeah, let's go ahead and wrap this bad boy up and make sure that's right. All right, cool. Until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
And Josh.
Take it easy.